Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Backyard Labrish, and I am Margaret, your backyard host, and I want to welcome you this evening to our show. And it's going to be fun today because we're really getting into the culture. For our listeners that know who we are celebrating a Backyard Labrish is established to celebrate the good, wonderful life of Jamaica and Jamaicans. And we are so proud of our heritage and our country. We wanted to just share information of how it used to be when we grew up there. So we welcome you to the show. And this evening we're going to have the pleasure of speaking with a real Jamaican. Of course, so far we've had real Jamaicans, but she's just going to be talking about different parts of the island that she lived. Now, I just wanted to share with our listeners my personal experience. I was born in Kingston, and my mother's family was, my mother and her family was from the north of Jamaica, which is Westmoreland, not too far from where Montego Bay is located. And I would travel from Kingston to Savlamar. It's really Savannah Lamar, but we call it Savlamar for short. You know, we Jamaicans just shorten things and call them different. And we, especially when we're labrishing, as we are now. So I thought I have known our guest today for quite some time, but didn't really know that she had lived in various parts of the island. Because as I was saying, sharing with you before, I was born in Kingston, but spent most of my holidays in Savlamar, where my mother was born and raised. So most of the people I know usually just go, if they're born one place, they go someplace else for the holidays or to visit a member of their family or their mother's side or their father's side. And we, although the island is small, we still felt like we were going out of town. It was a trip, and I really, really enjoyed it. But I never before met someone who had lived, physically lived, not just visited, in various parts of the island. So I thought it would be nice to share that with especially the friends of Jamaica that want to learn more about our culture. So I want to welcome our guest, Annette Scott, who was born in Jamaica, raised there, and actually went to college in Jamaica before she came here in the United States. Annette and I live in Atlanta, Georgia, and we've known each other for a long time. However, I just discovered that she had lived all over Jamaica, so I was very intrigued and thought I would ask her to share some of those experiences with me. So now I think that I have our guest on the line, and I'm going to open up the mic so she can say hi to our listeners. Are you there? Hello?
Hello, this is Donna Robinson.
Oh, it's Donna. Oh, hi, Donna. I'm sorry, Donna is our co-host, and I see that she's on now to help me with the show. However, our guest has not yet called in, but I see we have a guest from the 305 area, and I would ask that guest if she would like to say hi to us. She can touch the number one on her button, and so we can open up and say hi to her, and she can say hi to our co-host, Donna Robinson, who happens to be a friend of Jamaica. Because Backyard Labrish is about retaining and celebrating the rich Jamaica culture, but we also have a lot of friends of Jamaica and people who have been to Jamaica who loves our island. So I want to welcome you, Donna, and I expect that our guests will be calling in pretty soon. So does my caller from 305 want to say hi? I guess not. Some people just like to listen and not necessarily make themselves known. So now I see we have a caller from 404. Are you there? No? Okay. Nobody wants to talk to me. So, Donna, do you have anything you want to add?
Well, you know, I think that pretty much one of the things that you said that was pretty interesting for me is that, you know, when you look at the map, and, you know, I'm one of those, I am a friend of Jamaicans, and but unfortunately, I have not had the pleasure of going there yet, and that is one of my to-do lists is to go to Jamaica. But when you just look at Jamaica on a map, you really don't think of Jamaica as being different, you know, areas of Jamaica. And I think that as an American, you just, you know, go by the things that the media gives you. You always think of just the beaches and reggae music and pretty much, you know, standard foods that we're introduced to here. And to, you know, understand that there are actually differences, almost like north and south here in the United States, or Georgia versus maybe New York or something like that, that there's differences in the food and culture. In such a small island, that was kind of intriguing to me because that wasn't something that I would have thought. And, you know, I, you know, it's interesting that you found it intriguing as well, even though you're from Jamaica. And so to have an opportunity to share that with other people that are friends of Jamaica as well as to other Jamaicans, I think should be, you know, enlightening for everyone.
Yeah, well, actually, as I said, I mostly went to, you know, the north part of the island, which was Westmoreland. And the capital is Savlamar, and that's where my folks were from. And I didn't go a lot of other places. You know, I would go there for a week or a couple of weeks. I can't remember now. But I had never really met anybody who had physically lived in different places. So I found that quite intriguing. Now, I see where my caller from 305 would like to say hi. So welcome. Welcome to Backyard Labrish. Who do we have?
Hello, Margaret.
Hi. Calling from?
From Miami, Florida.
Oh, great. Welcome. I know who you are.
Okay.
I don't know. Did you used to go down to Savlamar too?
Well, I was listening to your first guest.
Uh-huh.
And she seems to be very much interested in maybe visiting the island.
Oh, yes,
and
yes.
That she has not been there as yet, but she has heard so many, you know,
uh-huh.
good things about the island.
Right, and Donna happens to be what I call a real good friend of Jamaica,
uh-huh.
because Donna is helping me to put together our website.
Okay.
And that's how interested she is in Jamaica itself.
Wonderful.
And Jamaicans. But I think I see where my guest of honor is on. So I want to welcome you to the show from Miami. I like when we get representation from all over the country, and hopefully it will soon be all over the world. So I want to remind our listeners listening online that you're listening to Backyard Labrish. And also to let you know that Backyard Labrish will be going live in a couple of days. So we want you to stay tuned. If you're on our mailing list, we invite you to check your mail because we'll be making an announcement soon. So let me open up the call to our other caller. And I believe it's our guest. So let me welcome. Who do we have here? 404-298.
Hi, Margaret. This is Annette Scott.
Hi, Miss Annette. Welcome to Backyard Labrish. How are you today?
Pleasure.
Yeah, well, it's a pleasure having you. I was just telling our listeners that I was intrigued when you told me that you had physically lived in different parts of the island, because would you believe it that I never visited Montego Bay before I lived here. I moved from Jamaica, or I left Jamaica for the first time in 1959, and I had never been to Montego Bay up to that time, because when I visited Sablemar, we would go to the beach in Negril or, you know, wherever, and drive around the country parts, but I'd never been to Montego Bay. I was living in the United States, I think, and I returned to Jamaica, and then the plane landed there first, before Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
I think, as Donna said, people think of the island as being so small, and they think that we know all people all over the island, number one, and number two, that we know the entire.
Yeah, that is they usually say, oh, I know so-and-so. Do you know that person?
Exactly so. But I want to say to the listeners that I met Annette since I lived here in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And I know more Jamaicans since I'm living in the United States than I knew when I grew up there. Personally, you know them personally. So I don't know if any of our listeners have any comments on that, but I honestly have become friendly with so many Jamaicans since I'm living here in the States.
That's almost the exact opposite of me, because I have lived all over Jamaica and almost embarrassed to say I went to 11 schools.
Oh, that is great. You had 11 different experiences.
Exactly.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about it.
Oh, well, I was born in Porus. That's in Manchester. And for those who don't remember,
Manchester would be
associated with oranges. That's where you got lots of citrus when the train stopped in Porus.
Ah, interesting.
Oranges.
And is that north, south, east, or
it's
west?
On the south side.
On the south side.
South side.
Uh-huh. So what big town would be near to you?
We would be between Mandeville and Maypen.
Oh, well, Mandeville is quite famous.
Right.
Okay, great.
Mm-hmm.
And then you moved where?
Well, I think it was when I was about 4 years. I went to live with my aunt, because my aunt was a teacher and her husband was a head teacher.
Uh-huh.
So I think my mother thought it was best that I, to get a good education, she carted me off to live with them. So we went to South Manchester. Don't ask me which town it was, but then, or which district, because that wasn't a town. But I remember we went to live in Clarendon, which is in a district called Mount Airy.
That's a name.
There are many Mount Airys in Jamaica, but this one is near Richmond Park, which I think is pretty much up in the mountains.
Uh-huh. No beaches around.
No. That is interior.
You know, most Americans believe that we all live on the beach.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
And that was very rural in I think we went to live there about 1950 or thereabout.
So tell me what you mean by rural. Very rural.
Well, Margaret, a lot of people might not remember, but for example, everything happened, all the social activities took place at the school.
At the school, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if there were very few cars in that area, or if any, because I remember you had, I remember I would visit my mom in Kingston, and I would go into Kingston with the truck driver who took the market people into Kingston.
And you'd sit in the front of the truck.
And I would sit in the front of the
truck. Me too. I can relate to that.
Or I would take the bus
to
Kingston, because I would spend holidays with my mom.
Right.
And we lived in Mount Airy until 1951, and I have vivid memories of that I think it was a hurricane we had in 1951.
Oh, yes, I remember.
And I think it was Charlie. And the teacher's cottage was destroyed because something fell right across the teacher's cottage, and then we had to live in the school for a time. So then we moved to Hanover, and this is very interesting. We went to my uncle-in-law, he went as headmaster to a school. I think the official name was St. Simon's, but it was the district was called Fat Hog Quarters.
Hello.
Hello.
As in H-O-G?
Yeah. Hello. Hello.
As, I hear we have a caller who wants to make a comment. It's from 305.
Yeah. Annette Scott, how are you?
Hi, who is that?
This is Julio.
Hi, Julio. How are you doing?
I am terrific.
Welcome to the Labrish, Mr. Thanks, Julio.
Thank you, Margaret.
We are just here labrishing.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. And I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish. And we just welcome you all, and we're sharing stories about our culture, because that's what Backyard Labrish is all about, especially we, the more senior ones. I'm the most senior, as I bill myself, the senior senior, but most of our listeners and callers, I think, are more or less not the young ones. So we're leaving footprints for them to listen to what things were like when we grew up. So we welcome you, Mr. Julia.
Yeah, my question.
And I understand that you know our guest, Annette.
Yes, I know Annette, but I didn't know so much about her. I'm learning a lot.
You see how good the Labrish is?
But
yes.
my question is, she indicated that she lived in Clarendon. And I'd like to know if she could tell us a little about Moko, if she knows
all right.
about Moko.
Well, as I was listening, I remember, one of the things I remember vividly as we speak is that that was when I in the district, you ask about what was unique. This is part of our heritage, because then they used to have this Pokomania. And they would have meetings, and I remember these ladies' heads would be tied and wrapped, and they would get into spirit and maybe fall on the ground. And I don't know if people remember this in Jamaica.
I do.
This happened in very rural Jamaica.
I do.
Now I realize when I used to go to NDTC performers, that was when I realized what all this Pokomania was about. So that was part of our African heritage.
I was just about to mention that. At this point, I just want to mention something that I found very interesting for me. When I came here, they used to have the Pokomania people in Kingston, too. And they used to have street meetings. You know, they had a meeting on the street, and you could go, the neighborhood children could go watch them do their thing. And they would have their robes on and their heads tied. But, of course, we never knew the origin of it, really.
Exactly.
When I came here to the United States, I took a special course at NYU under a professor that was doing that type of history. And I remember him stating, it had such an impact on me, that there was a big difference between the slaves that were brought here to the United States and the ones that were taken to the islands, especially Jamaica, because they were not, first of all, separated as much. The families, that the slave owners kept families together. And an interesting thing is they never took away their religious ornaments, which was the drums, right? And they never took away their adornments.
Oh.
And that was the reason Jamaicans, I don't know for other islands, but I know from Jamaica in the old days, always wore a lot of bangles, you know, bracelets on their hands and even on their feet. And I never knew the connection until I came here in the United States. And they never had them abandon their religious worship. And that's why you had, as we call it, the Obia man, and the spiritual, this Pokemania thing that you're talking about. So that was really the true connection.
And, you know, the main reason for that, Margaret, is that this the plantation owners, they were absentee owners. So it's the busher who managed the properties, like in Jamaica. And the busher fraternized with the slaves, and so they had all this, these children and what have you in the house. The ones who lived in the house were more favored.
Right, but, right. That happened a little here, too.
But not as, it was...
Not as prevalent, yes,
right.
Yes,
and
yes.
So
the Pokemania I know a lot about.
Yeah, so
Julia, did you have another question for her?
Yes, yes, I have another question, which would involve Clarendon. She indicated she lived in Clarendon. But, you know, it's interesting to hear people here in the United States would say, listen, I am from Moco. I am from Moco, but they don't talk about it with a certain amount of admiration. They talk about it as if it's one of those places that, you know, that the language is different. Can you tell us anything about Moco in terms of, you know, where it's located?
No, I can't tell you much about that because I was very young when I lived there, and we lived there just for just about a year or two, and then we had to relocate to, and we relocated to Hanover.
Mm-hmm.
So what parish is Moco?
It's in Clarendon. The way I remember it now is for those who travel between Kingston and, say, Mandeville, there's just past the border of Clarendon and Manchester is at Whitney Turn, and there's a road there that you could take up into the hills, and that's where it is. But there's another way, I think, going from Chapelton, but I don't have any memories of that route.
What I found interesting about Moco is the dialect. The dialect that comes out of Moco is entirely different than any other dialect in other parts of the country. But a very interesting dialect. And if you don't understand it, it's almost like a foreign language.
Well, you know, that's very, very interesting because I remember when I was growing up, too, my mother, you know, we had someone from a certain part of the country, and talking about dialect, I could never understand what they were saying. That is why I don't know how we could come up with a language that would be Patois, because what I remember, the Patois was different depending on the part of the island it was coming from.
Yeah,
Can you relate to that, Julia?
That's right, very much.
Yeah, so how could there be one general Patois language?
Well, that is what, you know, the boys that you are trying to advocate, but I agree with you. It would be difficult because it's spelled differently by many people. For example, Louise Bennett spelled her Patois words differently. Another artists in Jamaica. So it's going to be difficult to come up with a really, you know, single...
Because in truth and in fact, is not really a language per se, or cannot be perceived as one. Well, the similar things happen here in the United States in terms of a dialect, because people from New Orleans really pronounce certain things different. They have a different drawl to their... you know, how they say their voice.
Right, right.
And just like the Southerners, and depending on what part of the South you're from.
Right.
Yes,
right.
Because I remember things like when I, in Manchester, that side, you would say, for example, may I go somewhere? In Hanover, they never said may I go. They said me de go.
All right.
I didn't even know that there was a difference.
And like they would say, you would say, one of the popular things where we lived in fatter quarters. We were about 2.5 miles from Lucy, and so they would say Midegar Bay.
Right.
Uh-huh.
On another thing, like you said, Midigo.
Huh?
And in Hanover, them say Mibengo.
Ah,
very
isn't that
colorful.
Mm-hmm.
Very colorful.
Oh,
so this
very
is why there was this discussion in Jamaica when I was there in July, because I don't know if you know about the Wycliffe group who do Bible translations all over the world.
Right.
And they are wanting to translate the Bible, and they have the funding to translate the Bible into Patois.
Again, the spelling.
And that was how there was
yeah,
a big discussion why it shouldn't be done and why it does not make sense doing it.
How
and
far
I,
have they
like
covered
you
that?
Pointed out, there are different versions of Patois. So
that's right.
Which one would you select?
That's correct.
Right, right. And but it's what I found interesting that as and Julia talk about Moko having sort of a stigma because just because of the way it sounds, because I know nothing about Moko, but people would if they want to say, well, you're not very bright, they would say you come from Moko. Right?
Right, that's
which would imply you're not very smart. However, obviously, they were not singled out as not being very smart because Annette's relatives who were teachers in those days were stationed in Moko.
All right.
Well,
the point is, you see, that's what I see.
Yeah, yeah. It's a misnomer. Yeah.
Under the educational system that existed then, it didn't matter where you are. Whoever were relocating the teachers
right.
would send you, I suppose, wherever there was a need. And I don't think that people in a special place necessarily had better teachers than people in another part of the island. And I just wanted to know how any of our listeners might feel about that.
And I don't think it was just that it was so remote because, like Mike, my cousin, who also lived with my uncle and aunt, he went to Clarendon College.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So my point is that whereas the impression would be either someone that come from there or people who use the term, you know, you sound like you come from Moko. didn't realize that the unlike some places, even here in the States, that certain areas will have better teachers than other areas. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I don't think it was any different from a typical rural district in Jamaica.
Right, that's what I'm saying. They were exposed to the same system
mm-hmm.
of education.
I agree with that.
Whether they're in Moko or Kingston is my point.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good. Right, right, right.
I just want to say something. This is Donna Robinson. And I just want to say that first and foremost, it kind of reminds me of the controversy that we have here with the English language versus Ebonics, really.
Exactly.
Yeah, and actually, you know, stating that, you know, we should put Ebonics in the dictionary and all of that, which is, to me, totally ridiculous, but I guess if you're trying to figure it out, well, I guess if you're trying to, you know, document it, well, that might be something different. But, again, it's different based upon what area of the United States that you live in as to exactly how it's going to come out any way it goes. But I had a couple of questions. One, from American standpoint, I'm kind of lost on the question that was asked about polka. Is that polka?
Polka-mania.
Moko is the name of a district.
Oh, what's the name? Okay, now you were talking about some people, and they had headdresses and...
Oh, no, that's Polka-mania.
Polka-mania. Mm-hmm.
Now, what is this? Is it like a religion, or is it
yes.
just like Hare Krishnas? I mean, what is it?
No, it's a religion, which was, I figure, transported from Africa, which is our roots.
Ah, okay. And my other question for you was that when you moved to the different areas, did the food change or the culture, were there cultural differences?
Yes, the food was, it was pretty much the same, but then you ate more of certain things. Because in thinking back, I remember when we went to live in Hanover, because a lot of people, as you know, Hanover grew a lot of yams. And I remembered we used to have this fish, which I don't remember anywhere else in Jamaica. It was the goggle eye fish. And they would say, like, it was seasonal, and they would say, goggle eye running. That means goggle eye was plentiful.
Mm-hmm.
And so we ate a lot of fish during that period.
Interesting.
But basically, as growing up in Hanover, too, I know we had a lot, as children coming home from school, we would just stop at people's property and tear out canes, and we ate canes all the way home, because there was a lot of cane plantations down in that part of Hanover.
And you could actually break the cane off with your hand without...
Oh, yes. Yeah,
really?
Cane is very brittle, you know. You can just break, pull up a root of cane, and we would tear it with our teeth.
I know you can do it with your teeth, but I didn't really know that you could physically break or pull it out of the earth.
You didn't need anything.
Leave that because you're a Jamaican. You know everything about Jamaica, but I'm learning so much.
Yep.
Interesting.
And even at that side, I learned about, it was a lot of staple crops like bado. I don't know if you know what bado
is. I know what bado is.
Okay. And dashing and cocoa. That's
oh, yes,
I
know that.
About that. Because
and for our American listeners, that's like a root
yes,
that grows down. You know, it has big leaves, almost like, I wouldn't call it a palm, but like a lily or something in the lily family. But the fruit of it grows actually in the ground, so you have to uproot it in order to get the part that we eat, which is the dashing and the, what is the other thing?
Bado.
Bado. And they're sort of in the same family.
Yeah, they're all of the same family.
Our sisters. Yeah. So I know. I don't know if people are still eating that. Are they?
I haven't seen bado or dashing for the longest while.
So you used
but
to eat here? Or you mean when you go to Jamaica?
I don't know because I have not been to Hanover since I left '64 or thereabouts.
And so you moved, did you move from Hanover to any other areas?
Oh, yes. We went there in about 51, and by 1954, we went to live in another parish, that's Trelawney, which is the home of Lightning Bolt.
Oh, right.
So we moved to a district called Albert Town.
Uh-huh.
And while I lived in Albert Town, I then got a scholarship and I went to a high school which was about 15 miles away in Stewarttown. I went to a girls' boarding school, which was similar to the English boarding schools, because we had an English headmistress, and quite a few of the staff were people from Scotland or England, and
they lived in that district too.
Yeah, well, it was like a campus.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. The high school was on a campus.
Oh, what was the name of that school?
Westwood High School for Girls.
Uh huh. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And when you say, I know that only girls were at the school,
mm-hmm.
but did they have a boys' school that was close by?
No, there wasn't a boys' school close by, but there in Brownstown, which was close by, there was York Castle.
Uh-huh.
But I think York Castle was a co-ed school.
I see.
So I think our point of reference for a boys' school was Cornwall College, which was located in
Montego Bay. Yes, I'm familiar with that.
That was the nearest totally boys' school.
Uh-huh. I don't know why, for some reason, I thought you went to Excelsior.
Mm-hmm. I went to Westwood and St. Hugh's.
Oh.
Yes.
And as far as I know, you still have connections with St. Hugh's.
Yes. I do have connections with both. But St. Hugh's has a very active alumni in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
Yes, and I attend the activities and the meetings. I'm very involved with that one.
Okay. And what is that? Is it called a sorority or what do you call
alumni.
It? Alumni. Alumni, I see.
Mm-hmm.
And you do things for Jamaica or just
yourself? We do have functions and fundraisers for the school. And you're going to have, I think Sharon is supposed to call you and tell you about the function that is going to be on the 27th of this month, which is 2 weeks away.
Uh-huh.
It's a cheese and wine party.
Uh-huh.
And we are having some guest performers, and then it's going to be a really nice evening. And I don't have the particulars with me because I thought Sharon was going to call us and tell us more about it. Sharon is the president.
I got you. Okay, back to your Jamaican roots now. So tell me about your transition from that all-girls school to the University of the West Indies.
Oh.
That's Kingston, right?
Yes. Actually, the transition, what was more a transition for me was leaving a boarding school environment to a day school environment, which was St. Hugh's.
Uh-huh.
Because at a boarding school, you can pretty much say you're programmed.
Uh-huh.
You have special times to do special things, and you do them. The bell rings, and you know you move on.
So what, did you enjoy that, or did you consider
it? I did. Some girls rebelled against it. They didn't like it.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't have a problem.
Uh-huh.
And so when I went to a day school, you know, to do set time to do my homework, you made the decision yourself.
I got you. It's like the kids here going off to college.
College, exactly.
Uh-huh.
Now, I went to university as an adult, so I was more mature. I had worked for many years, and so I took leave of absence to go to university. So that was the transition wasn't difficult because I had a lot of time to do my work, and because I had worked for many years. For the first year or two, a lot of subjects I had to do, I was pretty familiar
mm-hmm.
with them, especially accounting, because I had been in accounting for several years.
Which incidentally is what you made your career in, because I just want to let our listeners know that Annette retired as a budget analyst with the county government. So she really stuck with what she chose, I suppose, when you were younger, right, Annette? Because I know a lot of people sometimes, you know, change, switch, and they're not necessarily doing what they went to school for.
I always worked at jobs that were accounting related.
Uh-huh.
Because I was an accounting officer in central government, and then I worked at the income tax department as a tax.
You mean in Jamaica?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I did audits, tax audits, and then I shifted. I went to the Water Commission, and I was in accounting, and I did budgeting.
Now, this is in Kingston?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
And then when the transition to Atlanta was not difficult because fortunately for me, within 3 months of being here, I was appointed as a budget analyst with Fulton County Government, and I did that for.
And how many years did you work there?
18 years.
Wow! And I just wanted to say this: that Julia, you'll agree with this. She went from Moco to Kingston.
Between Moco
the United States.
I lived in several places between.
In between. So you want to tell us about anything else in another part of the island that you can really remember that made an impact on you?
I think when we lived in Hanover, that for me was quite different because, remember, we were from central Jamaica.
And Hanover is where?
Hanover is in the west.
Okay. Is there any water around the west there?
Yes. Parts of it, like Lucy, which is the capital of Hanover, and Sandy Bay and Green Island.
Always on the ocean.
That area. Those are our cities on the coast.
I got you. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And it was quite different in Hanover, especially for us, because at summer holidays, we would go back to Porus for holidays. And that was an experience because we would have to get up like about 2:30 in the mornings and go down to Lucy. And then we would take the mail coach to Anchovy, and then we would take the train.
Mm-hmm.
And from Anchovy, which is the second, I think it's, you had Montego Bay, then Anchovy as the next station. And then we would spend about 6 hours traveling to Porus on the train.
Oh, just to Porus, not King?
Mm-mm, to Porus.
Wow.
Yes, so that was, and one of the things I remembered in Hanover, too, on the way from where we lived to Lucy, there was a hill, and it was called Animal Hill.
Huh.
And that was very interesting because on that hill there were three families, and they were the Hogs, the Mares.
Their names?
Hogs, H-O-G-G.
Really?
Last name. There were the Mares.
Oh.
And what? The Shares. There were these three families that lived on this hill.
Uh-huh. What was the last name?
Stairs. S-T-A-I-R, I think.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Is that why it was called Animal Hill?
Mm-hmm. Yes, because there were these three unique families.
Wow.
Yep.
And did they own the property there? They owned the hill or what?
I would imagine so.
Interesting.
Yeah,
very interesting.
That some vivid memories I have living there.
See, I never heard of that. Have you, Julia?
No.
I never heard of Animal Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
this is quite an
education for me.
And I know the area very well because, you know, I was involved in the banana boards and so on and so on. And I know Anchovy very well because my grandfather owned a lot of property in Anchovy.
Oh, really?
Yes. So maybe I saw Annette coming by on that train sometime.
Small world, isn't it? And look, as I said, I'm learning more about my island since I'm living here. You know, because as you know, I don't know, I'm a lot older than you guys. But when I went to school, you know, we didn't get much history. Except for the parishes and the, you know, Cornwall, Middlesex, and Surrey,
okay.
That kind of thing, and how long the island was, which I think is only 146 miles, am I correct?
144.
144, and how wide?
I think it's 40-something.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think of that, now, you know, that's almost like going down the road.
Mm-hmm.
But when we, as a child, especially when you're traveling from one part of the island to the next, it looks like it's another planet. So it never seemed small to me at all. It really, really didn't. So how about you, Julia?
Well, yes, I would, you know, agree with you about in terms of the size. But, you know, and I'd mentioned this runner, Bolt.
Uh-huh.
Usain Bolt, and he lived, is it Westmoreland, you said?
He's from Trelawney.
He's from Trelawney, right.
Uh-huh.
And but the interesting thing about it is that we've produced so many great athletes,
right.
And great people, you know, like, you know, not only athletes, but writers and historians. You talk about Marcus Garvey and all those people. So Jamaica has another side that you know, should be publicized or...
Right.
Or,
that's what Backyard Labrish is all
about.
We're
a nation, we're small, but we've produced a lot of great people for the size of the country and for the kind of people that we have produced in terms of the various areas.
Mm-hmm.
It is very commendable. And
it's very diverse, just like we are,
exactly.
You know, all across the board.
And I talked about dashin and cocoa and yam and that kind of thing, and this is one of the things that Usain Bolt indicated that those are some of the things that
yam.
He ate a lot of those things that maybe that contribute to why he was so fast.
Stamina, yes, yes.
I don't know how true that is, but, you know, it's
well, actually, they say that, you know, a lot of those earth food, that the people who are into holistic foods here and the naturalists believe that the things that are grown down in the earth have more nutrients than the things that actually would come out of on top of the earth, I think. That's just their beliefs. I don't know whether it's right or wrong. But, you know, there could be something in that because we eat more earth food across the island that I think...
Well, there is a research going on right now to determine exactly what is contributing to... why all people are so, you know, so active
athlete.
And so, right. And, you know, there is many schools of thought. Some people are saying that, you know, the slaves that came to Jamaica were, you know, were the best and the strongest and the rest. There are so many areas why the athletes are like they are, because it's not just male, it's also female.
Mm-hmm.
All female are outstanding athletes is the people in general. So
right.
It has to go back to some roots of some sort, not just the food, but it's the basic, you know, composition of the people and so on. So
right.
Another interesting aspect of our Jamaica heritage, slavery and all those kind of things that, you know, I'm sure will come up in your backyard lab.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. But, Annette, I wanted to just share with the listeners a story that you told me, because I know that although we perhaps, the island itself started off like a lot of other islands and what happened here in the United States with the being inhabited by one species of people, and then being taken over by the next and taken over by the next and slavery being introduced. But I think that for me, being born and raised in Jamaica gave me more of a foundation or actually an acknowledgement of who I am as a person. And I like to call myself a child of the universe. So that when I came to the United States, my first visit in 1959, I just knew I was a human. I didn't really, it wasn't whether I was black or white or even from Jamaica. I just knew who I was as an individual. And I think that a lot of that came from being born and raised there. And I don't know if any of our listeners that are from Jamaica have that same feeling.
Well, it goes back to many people.
Right, right, right. And our guest has a story that she mentioned to me, and I thought that was very interesting because I had similar emotions and feelings when I came here. So, Annette, would you just share what you talked about with me that I thought was so interesting, just because I could relate to it?
Yeah. No, we were talking, Margaret and I were talking about, you know, fitting in a multicultural, coming from a multicultural society, because I went to school and most of the teachers were white, and we had a mixed, some students, we had a mixture of students, we had, as a matter of fact, we had every Chinese, Indians, of course, blacks, which was the majority. We had even girls from Venezuela at school with me. And so I was comfortable with different races. And when I went to Kingston, to work, I had to work among all different people. But what I remembered was that we had some, in my job, we had some consultants working with us, and we were pretty close. And so, and they were all Americans, and they were Caucasian. So, but I remember when I just came here, one of them was passing through because he was taking his daughter's stuff up to somewhere up north, but he had lived in Miami. So he asked me if when he got to Atlanta, if he could overnight at my house. So of course I said yes. But then after I said yes, I guess in the environment in America, I started to feel very conscious because a lot of, most of the people in that subdivision were black. And here am I saying I'm having a white guest, which is something I never ever thought of before.
I mean, you never thought of him as black, you as white and
no,
black.
And it's that, you know,
in interacting with him, it was not an issue.
The color was not an issue.
Right. Well, I want to mention, I've always felt the same way. It was never an issue. And I found it very interesting because Beverly Manley, in a part of her book, talked about that, that when she went to London, actually the first date that she had was with an Englishman. And she fitted right in. He took her and introduced her to all his friends who were, I'm sure, like him. But she was never out of place or uncomfortable or a misfit, as I would say it. And I think that that is one of the things that have perhaps helped a lot of Jamaicans that come here to excel or get propelled into industry and business and all of that, perhaps when some of their American peers would have an issue or it would be, you know, uncomfortable or so, we just slide right in and go with the flow. That's how it was for me anyhow.
Most Jamaicans, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know if the same feeling or the same emotions are now as it was when we were growing up, because I haven't, you know, I'm here almost 50 years, so, and I don't visit Jamaica or have a lot of connections with it anymore because my children were born and raised here. And I, unlike Annette, I don't see myself going back there to retire. I will always go to visit, but I don't see myself going back there to retire. So I know that the rest of my life will be spent here in the United States. However, I still feel very rooted. But at the same time, I don't really know much about what the culture is now and how people think and how they feel about themselves. I can only talk about how I feel about myself and how the impression it had on me when I came here. You know, so I didn't really view myself as different in terms of race. It was in terms of perhaps different in the way we did things, you know, or how we thought about things, but not necessarily like a different person on the planet. So I thought that was interesting. Any comments?
Oh, well, I have, I thought my experiences in Jamaica equipped me to adjust here, and so I did not have a problem in the workplace or adjusting
mm-hmm.
in this new
mm-hmm.
environment. And Jamaica, when it comes to Jamaica, initially, I said I came here for 5 years because my son came here for university and that I came to help him while he was at college, because that's another thing. Most Jamaicans pay for their children's education, whether
right.
in college or not. And so I eventually I'm here 18-20 years, but I have been back to Jamaica every year since I've been here, and over the last 2 years, I go back every 6 months for a month, and I'm quite comfortable adjusting. First couple of days, you might feel, you know, very conscious of what's all the reports we have, but then all my friends are so comfortable. I just sit in, and we go all over the place without any fear or what have you. And especially in Mandeville, where I spend a lot of time, it's so much more relaxed, and the climate is so good. So.
Yes. What is the elevation in Mandeville? Does anybody know? I know it's a little higher than the rest of our.
Maybe 5,000 feet.
So the weather is always a little different from the rest of the country.
Very salubrious weather.
Very.
The kind of weather that keeps you healthy.
Right.
It sure does. Because when I go back, now all the aches and pains go.
I know what you mean. I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Back Talk Labrish, and we have a weekly show where we're just sharing stories, and I like to say we're leaving footprints for the younger generation, and I see we have some people online that are perhaps talking to each other, but we want to invite you to come back often. And also to let you know that you can visit www.backyardlabrish.com, and you might be surprised because you might have entrance to the backyard very soon. So,
Julio.
Okay, thanks. Great to
hear. Nice hearing you.
Thanks, Dennis.
Yes, well, Miami, we welcome you, and we want you to spread the word to your friends to come join the Labrish. We love lavishing here from the Atlanta base, but we want to spread our lavish all over the world, so we want to tell your friends to come share with us.
And congratulations, Margaret. I think you've started a wonderful program.
Well, thank you so much. And I see that
the
0941 want to ask a question. Go ahead. Oh, just a minute. Let me open you up. Let me open my mic here. We have 2 minutes left, and you're on.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Really quick, I just want to ask, be it a Jamaican or a friend of Jamaican, what would you advise if we were coming to Jamaica, that some of the places that we might should see outside of just the beach?
Which end of are you landing? In Montego Bay? Is that will be your base or where?
Yes,
Montego Bay.
Okay. Well, if you're in Montego Bay, you're strategically placed because you can easily go to Negril on a day tour. And you can also go to Ocherias. And on the way from Montego Bay to Ocherias, there are the caves. Do you remember the name of those caves, Julio? Oh, Julia is gone. But there are the caves.
There. I have to open him up. Julia, do you remember the name of the caves on the way to Ocherias? Julia? Oh, goodness.
He's gone. But there are the caves there. And in Ocherias, you can go to the Duns River Falls, which is a nice day trip. And there are lots of tours that you can check at your hotel, and they will tell you about these tours. I know in Montego Bay, that side, there's a bird sanctuary, too, that you can visit.
It really depends on your interest, but there's lots of things to do.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have our Miami caller on?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay.
Yes,
do you remember
yes.
the name of the caves from Montego Bay?
Green
to,
Grotto.
We have 35
the Green Grotto.
Yeah, there's the
green
caves. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you have a comment, Mr. Miami?
No, not really, but I would also invite her to go over to Port Antonio.
Oh yes. That is where Errol Flynn used to live. Yeah. Jamaica is a very interesting island.
It's a totally different setting from Ocho Reyes or Montego Bay or Negril. It's more natural.
Only have 2 seconds.
It's very relaxing.
Right. All right. Well, I want to thank all callers for calling in. Thank you, Donna, for being my co-hostess. And I want to thank my callers calling in and raising their hands. And for those of you who didn't raise your hands but you're listening, we want to say thank you for being with us, and we hope to see you next week. Just check your email, and we'll tell you what's going on. In the meantime, visit us at www.backyardlabrish.com. This
Thanks
is Margaret.
Margaret.
Hi. Say bye.
Bye now.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.